This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hi, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and Wild meet this afternoon at 3 o'clock. Love the mid-afternoon games. I'm Ezra Ginsberg, joined by Dave Manouk and Sean Assor, and producer Alex Drew Mandel is away from the show this week. He will be back next week. And boys, it's our last show of 2018, and what a way to kick it off by talking about Thursday night's game between the Jets and the Flames. Obviously not the result the Jets wanted, boys. I thought the Jets played really well, but it was the Johnny Gaudreau show, and we have to start off by talking about the return of Adam Lowry and Andrew Copp to the lineup, Dave. I mean, obviously, Lowry has a huge impact in the game, scores the goal, but now the Jets are 100% healthy, and now Paul Maurice is finally going to get the line combinations that he wants.
And interestingly enough, he maintains Mason Appleton in the lineup, so just goes to show you what some hard work can do for a young prospect, getting him the chance to stay in the lineup. Obviously, Adam Lowry only missed the two games, and after the game he spoke about how he didn't even feel like he really missed that much time because he took the morning skates both in San Jose and in Vancouver. Andrew Copp, obviously, a little bit more time away from the Jets, wearing that fancy new tinted visor. He was talking about how the separate from the concussion he was dealing with, the fact that he had to deal with he said his eyes are a bit overworked when he was talking to a specialist, and he was saying that the tinted visor will help reduce some of the brightness in the building. I jokingly referenced that chance he had early in the first period when he didn't bury it. I said, had he not been wearing the visor, he probably would have scored. But you know, obviously, Coach Maurice is happy to have those guys back. I think it was good for the Jets, though, this whole period of time, both when their defense was you know, injured and their forwards, that they learned that they can rely on these players. Nick Batan came in, played well. Brendan Lemieux came in. They had these guys that they could rely upon when they were missing key pieces like, you know, Andrew Copp and Adam Lowry. So from the Jets' perspective, especially and probably most importantly, seeing that Jack Roslovic could go up into that third line center position and obviously not really miss a beat and show that he's a pretty good, young, dynamic player and has some really good ability and a lot for Jets fans to look forward to. So I think it's really important for the team to show that the depth is there and that, you know, because as we know, the playoffs are a long animal, and if you want to have any success, I think you need to have that depth. So obviously good to get back to being a healthy team, but obviously good to also to see that you have the depth in the organization.
Dave, Lowry's stat line from that game Thursday night, he was centering, of course, the third line with Matty Perreault and Brandon Tanev, played 14 minutes and 21 seconds. We mentioned that he had the goal, the Jets' only goal, 3 shots on net, 1 block shot, 2 takeaways. He was out there for 4.5 minutes, 4 minutes and 25 seconds to be exact, of shorthanded time, and he was 65% in the faceoff circle. I thought that was really impressive for a guy that missed the last two games. And he missed a lot of time last year, but a guy who had missed some time, there was the holiday break, he comes in, and it was almost like he didn't even miss anything, right? Like, he was dominant in the faceoff circle, he gets the goal off of the turnover in the Calgary Flames' end. He really had an impact on the game. Should mention, the first half of the show today is going to be all about the Winnipeg Jets. We've got Scott Billick coming up at 9:30. Scott Billick, of course, of NHL.com and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune is going to join us. She's in Winnipeg covering the game for the Star Tribune. She's going to join us at 10. At 10:30, then we're going to switch to more of a broad NHL discussion. We've got Marty Biron of MSG TSN coming up at 10:30. And at 11 o'clock, we've got Brian Hedger. A lot of talk about Artemi Panarin. His agent, Dan Milstein, was on Leafs Lunch TSN 1050 talking to Pierre LeBrun about Artemi Panarin, who most people expect to test the free agent waters. So Brian Hedger is going to join us at 11. And then we're going to talk about the World Juniors at 11:30. So jam-packed show. Sean, I want to get your take on the game on Thursday night between the Jets and the Flames. Obviously, a lot going on there. You had the Pacific Division leading team against the Central Division leading team. Obviously, two of the best lines in all of hockey, and Johnny Gaudreau obviously gets the best of the Jets. What was your overall take on the game, and what did you think of all of the kerfuffle surrounding Connor Hellebuyck and the knee to the head that he suffered at the hands of, or at the skates or knee of Noah Hanifin?
First of all, that was quite the knee to the head. I mean, it happened fast, hard, and it was a direct blow to the side of the head for Connor Hellebuyck. Nervous energy a little bit, down on the ground, face down. You're thinking, please, no, not again, 2018. Don't do this. And gets up. He says post-game, it was nothing. Shrugged it off, put my helmet on, back to work. Shrugs the athletic therapist off. Be gone with you. But a really good game. I mean, the Jets took a pretty... I don't want to say desperate, but, I mean, Calgary was entering that game, loses a 3 in a row. They did not want to lose 4 in a row. And the Jets, they put up a good fight. I mean, it was a good game. It was fun. It was exciting. We got to see what Mark Giordano was doing this year. He's just an unbelievable specimen on the back end for Calgary. And the Jets, like you were talking, as we're talking about, a couple familiar faces back in the lineup with Andrew Kopp and Adam Lowry. I thought both of them looked real good. I thought Dmitry Kulikov had a really strong game for the Jets. And it was just one of those games where, you know, it was a good game. Two top teams in their respective divisions going back and forth. I mean, you'd look at the score sheet and go, oh, Johnny Gaudreau torched the Jets. They scored one goal. He beat a goalie once and took a real good slash on the arm, which cost Dustin Byfuglien 3 cents.
Right, and it obviously, you know, an unfortunate, you know, deflection off of Line A's stick. He's coming back on the play, and, you know, he probably shouldn't have, you know, got that long stick out, but, you know, Shawnee, I want to talk about Connor Hellebuyck's comments. I want to play Hellebuyck's comments because his comments yesterday to the media, Mike McIntyre specifically, who was co-hosting the afternoon ride, Hellebuyck's comments got a lot of attention yesterday because he wasn't happy with the way it was handled on the ice. Hanifin kneeing him and then, you know, him getting shaken up a little bit. So here are Hellebuyck's comments, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about them.
Were you surprised that he came through? I mean, did you see him coming at all, or did you...
No, all I did is reach over and cover the puck, so it's a pretty routine save. And that's what I was telling these guys. Like, guys are doing that more often. They're really reckless in front of the goalie now. They don't really care because they don't really get called as many interferences as they should and not as many penalties and not as many fights. So the guys just do whatever they want.
Really? You've noticed a trend?
Yeah, I don't know if you have, but I've definitely noticed a trend where they're trying to take a little more from us.
So what's it going to take to change it?
I don't know. Probably nothing. They don't want it to change. They like the goals, and they want more goals, and want to take more from us. So I don't know. It's hard to say.
It wasn't like it was loose for any stretch of time, and he's a defenseman, so it's not like he was.
He wasn't shoved in or anything. That's you know what needs to happen is a penalty needs to be called, and then their coach is going to say, "Oh, it's a dumb penalty to take," and then he's not going to come storming at the net when I'm covering the puck. He's going to take a better route.
Didn't think the knee to the head was intentional, did you?
Think it was intentional, but he definitely didn't try to avoid it. Right. Yeah, he could have stretched out. I think he was more cared about himself than about anyone else around him.
Should there have been a penalty on the play? I mean, it was clearly a pretty big knee to the head. And you see that, I think, more often than you did in previous years. I mean, are players across the NHL taking liberties with goaltenders? Hellebuyck, obviously, a day later, he's still pretty upset about it.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you rewatch that play, there really isn't any attempt to avoid Hellebuyck. I mean, it's happening so fast, and these guys are going so, like, at crazy speed, but, I mean, there really wasn't any attempt to avoid him, and he crashes directly into him, and then Hellebuyck, obviously frustrated. I mean, we've seen goals taken away where players will just nudge a goaltender and they'll call goalie interference. So conversely, I mean, you got to protect these netminders.
Right. And Sean, doesn't the question then become, you know, could Noah Hanifin have avoided that contact, right? I think he could have.
He could have probably, or at least could have shown an attempt. And it's funny because in Hellebuyck's other comments, he says, well, now with my penalty in Los Angeles, I've taken more penalties than I've drawn. So, obviously, a little bit of frustration out of number 37.
Right, and Hellebuyck, guys, is not the type of goalie that, you know, you expect to be, you know, up in everyone's face. He's not exactly what you would call the Patrick Waugh type of, you know, fiery goaltender. I mean, he's a pretty calm and collected goaltender. He doesn't go behind the net and play the puck, I think, you know, more than your average goaltender. But in this particular case, I mean, he was shaken up. And I guess, you know, the other side of this, or the other part of this is, you know, should he have been taken off the ice and gone through the concussion protocol? Because it wasn't a light tap. I mean, for those who haven't seen it, Noah Hanifin is following through on the play after Hellebuyck makes the save. And he takes a pretty big shot to the head, courtesy of Hanifin's leg, his knee, and he's shaken up. I mean, his mask comes off, and Hellebuck was clearly shaken up. So you wonder maybe if Lauren Brossois should have come into the game, and then maybe Hellebuck goes into the dressing room. Now, obviously, it's up to Hellebuck if he feels like, you know, he can't continue in the game. But, I mean, this was, I think, a big turning point in the game, and I also think that, you know, this was probably a scrappier game than you expected. Maybe we shouldn't have been surprised with players like Matthew Tkachuk and, you know, TJ Brody and Sam Bennett. I mean, they have guys that can mix it up.
Garnet Hathaway.
I mean, you saw Garnet Hathaway and Ben Chiarot get into it. Buff got in there, right, and mixed it up. Buff took some penalties on Thursday night. So, I mean, I think the question becomes, you know, are these types of plays avoidable? I mean, I think it should have been at least 2 minutes. I'm not saying that he should have been kicked out of the game, but, I mean, Hellebuck takes a knee to the head there. I think the NHL has to do a better job of protecting the goalies.
Yeah, no, I think the point Hellebuck is making is not obviously nothing he can do about what just happened, but he's definitely trying to get the message out for the next time the refs, because you know the refs pay attention to this kind of thing, and the league pays attention to it, so they hear comments made by a goaltender, especially considering that the goalies now have had such a reduction in the size of their equipment.
Yeah, great point.
So from their perspective, it's like, okay, guys, like we're already being reduced in terms of our, from what their perception is, their safety. They're thinking to themselves, you can't now have guys going through the crease and taking these types of shots on the goalies, and A, there's not even a call on it, and B, like removing the safety aspect, so there's no penalty called against these players, so you're not dissuading them from doing it in the future, because like Hellebuck said, it's not like he has to go and answer to Bill Peters and say, well, why did you take that stupid penalty? There was no penalty call, so really there's nothing lost from the Flames' perspective. Now Hellebuck, to his credit, was, as to your point about the concussion, spoke about how it runs with a goalie and essentially says, like, he goes through it with the trainer and it's at his discretion at that point. Simply, you know, and obviously the trainer's talking to him about, you know, and seeing, you know, monitoring him. And then they talk to the concussion spotter. And then obviously the conversation would escalate if there was a problem. But, obviously goalies are a lot different because it's a lot more of a critical position. So, I it's an interesting perspective as to whether he should have been pulled or not, but he claimed that he was fine, and that's all you can really go on at that point.
Yeah, and interesting just being in the PayWorks broadcast booth with Paulie Edmonds and Trevor Kidd for that game and watching Kidder's reaction, a former NHL netminder, and he was going on about how it's not like a player when he gets any contact to the head. The goaltender helmets, the padding inside is so thin and so limited. It's a mask. He described it as a mask, not a helmet. Mm-hmm. So you think about that and the contact and the speed and the size of a Noah Hanifin. I mean, that's scary stuff.
You know, sticking with contact, I mean, I realize, you know, big news yesterday was that Dustin Byfuglien was fined $2,500, which I imagine was coming from some of his teammates, but that slash at the end of the game, I'm still trying to figure out why he was assessed a penalty if it was delayed and it was on an empty net goal. But did you have a problem with Buff's slash? I mean, a lot of people thought that, you know, Johnny Gaudreau might have been embellishing a little bit. He does have a history of embellishment, but I don't think we're going to make too much out of this. But, I mean, it was a pretty bad slash.
Oh, it was a bad slash, and he was 2 feet ahead of him after getting absolutely danced at the blue line, and I mean, we maybe a little bit of frustration, but, well, I mean, listen, we've seen Johnny Gaudreau get hacked a whole bunch of times. The Minnesota game, I remember, didn't he have his hand broken by Eric Staal? And then he went on the record saying it's ridiculous getting all these whacks and slashes or whatever. So Johnny Gaudreau's taking a few whacks. He said it post-game. It won't be the last time he's been hit. It's hockey. It happens. But, I mean, it's a little bit malicious.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Guys, I wanted to quickly talk about the fourth line. And we mentioned Andrew Kopp started the game on the fourth line. He finished the game on the fourth line. But, of course, he's been on the third line, the TLC line, with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev for the majority of the year. And I wanted to specifically talk about Jack Roslovic, because I think everyone agrees that Jack Roslovic has lots of talent and his upside is huge. He's in a big goal-scoring slump right now, though. He's got no goals in his last 11 games. He only has one assist in his last 11 games, two goals in 36 games on the season. And again, I'm not singling him out here, but I think, you know, we just have to address that, you know, Roslovic right now is struggling. And sure, he's only getting 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes of ice time a game. I guess, Dave, you've watched him probably more than anybody since his time with the Moose. What have you seen with Roslovic, and how does he snap out of this?
Well, I think part of it is usage. I think, like, I'm looking at the time on ice from last game, and he played the least amount of any forward, including Mason Appleton. I mean, Jack Roslovic played 7 minutes and 31 seconds. So it's you know, it's a function of where he's getting used. I mean, obviously you have to take advantage of the time that you're given and the opportunity. But at the same time, you know, he's such a good player. Like I said, when he filled in for Adam Lowry at that third line center position, you just see his ability and you can see the things that he's able to do. So, I mean, again, it's just an adjustment, I think, because not that he's not used to it, but these guys are used to being the top guy, the top dog. And then you go from being that to a guy who has to be more of a role player. And so it's an adjustment. So the question is, are you relying upon Jack Roslovic to provide you with a ton of offense, some offense, a little offense, or are you just happy with him being able to not necessarily just hold water? But and that's, I think, something that Coach Maurice has to kind of think about. I mean, think about it. We're in game 37, and he's using Blake Wheeler 21 minutes, Mark Scheifele 22 minutes. I mean, it's game 37. Maybe you want to dial that back a little bit and increase the time you're giving the other guys because, again, going into the playoffs, that's what you're going
to
need.
Yeah, real fast, Davey. I think you nailed it with the word adjustment. I mean, Jack Roslovic has had to adjust to a lot of different circumstances this season. I mean, he's got moved out of the center to the wing. He got moved up the line for Adam Lowry. Now he's back. He's had a rotating cast of line mates throughout the season for the most part. And now we're starting to see a little bit of continuity with him, with Mason Appleton and whoever else slots in on that fourth line now. But yeah, I think he's had a lot to adjust this season. It's a lot for a young player to take in. But, you know, with the limited minutes, I think he's looked pretty decent.
Right. And the reason why I bring it up, just because he doesn't have any points in his last seven games. And I realize, you know, he's playing the least amount of minutes of any of the forwards. But I just think the Jets are expecting more offensive production out of Roslovic. But I am a huge fan of his game. We're going to pay some bills right now, boys. We're going to head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the power play. The Jets have not scored a power play goal in the last four games. And Patrick Laine, he's also struggling a little bit. He doesn't have any points. Pardon me, he has one assist. No goals in his last five games. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
The line. Jack Roslovic takes it, drops it for Kyle Connor. Sends it back for Dustin Bufflin. Cross ice. Laine scores! Patrick Laine with the ripper from the offside. 20th power play goal of the year for Patrick Laine and his 44th on the campaign.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild today at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The afternoon ride follows us with Huss and Rick at noon, and then at 2 o'clock, Kevin Owen Friends with the Manitoba Building Trades pregame show. This segment of the show is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all of your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Hoping to see Frank and Mauro at the game this afternoon. I'm actually going with my wife Naomi and little Ariella.
Her first
Jets game.
Are you going with the earmuffs?
We're going to take the earmuffs.
Nice.
And we're going to have the baby Bjorn.
What's that?
Like the baby carrier.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. I'm gonna have her on the baby carrier. So it's gonna be tough to have my beer in my left hand and the nachos in the right hand.
If anybody can do it, Ezzy, I suspect it's you.
Looking forward to it. It's gonna be lots of fun, boys. I mentioned right before the break, I wanted to talk about the Jets' power play. It's been struggling, and you know I don't want to raise alarm bells and start talking about how you know this Jets' power play isn't as good as we thought it was. I mean, it is that good. It's still the second ranked power play in the league. I wouldn't be surprised, pardon me, third, Dave Minuk is correcting me, third ranked power play.
By 0.1. So it's you're just off.
The Jets have not scored, boys, a power play goal in the last four games. They're 0-10. And granted, last game against the Flames, there were only two power play opportunities, and they had some good looks. Patrick Laine did have five shots in that game. I mean, he rang one off the post, and obviously that doesn't count as a shot. So I don't think, you know, Patrick Laine is necessarily struggling as much as we think he's struggling, but I want to know what you guys have seen over the last five games, because you guys watch all of the games, and this power play is certainly not firing on all cylinders. And we know the talent the Jets have out there with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, Dustin Bufflin, Kyle Connor, we talked about Laine, and even the second power play unit. right, with Nikolai Ehlers and Brian Little and Matty Perreault and whether it's Jacob Trouba or Josh Morrissey out there. And I don't think it's a question of skill, talent, personnel, but are the Jets maybe a little bit too reliant on the power play right now? I mean, the Jets have lost two of their last four games. And granted, before they lost that one game, they had won five in a row before the game against the LA Kings. But what are you seeing, Dave, maybe as far as are teams adjusting to the Jets' power play, or is it just a question of it's in a bit of a slump?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like, I was watching, obviously, specifically in the Calgary game, it seemed that there was a lack of – well, first of all, I think teams are adjusting. I think teams are being very aggressive, especially knowing that Blake Wheeler is the vision behind the power play. He's the guy who's going to set things up. So they're knowing to be very aggressive on him. They're obviously not giving Mark Scheifele much time and space in front of the net, because obviously when he gets that opportunity, he more often than not puts it into the back of the net. So I think it's a combination of things. I would suggest that teams are adjusting a little bit to the Jets' power play because it was so lethal. They knew they had to like game plan for that. So I think that's one aspect. I think another aspect is simply that maybe the Jets aren't having the same puck luck they may have been having earlier, and some of those bounces that they may have been getting before, some of those cross seam passes that were going perfectly onto the tape of the player and getting put in the back of that aren't necessarily falling as easily as they were before, which happens throughout the course of a long season. I think that was part of it. I think we saw, especially in the shorthanded goal against, you know, there's maybe a bit, not necessarily confusion, but almost a little bit of, I don't want to say laziness, but there was just not that alacrity, that need to get that puck. And I think we saw that a little bit because, you know, it was kind of in between, I think, Line A and Byfuglien, and Line A could have probably got there, didn't, and then the Flames break out, and then Jankowski puts it, shorthanded, give him that 3-1 goal and kind of sealed the deal. So to me, I think it's a combination of things. I don't think it's anything to be worried about. As you said, they're the third best power play in the league right now. They still got, you know, some of the most lethal weapons out there. The second power play unit also has been very good, I think, and has looked really dangerous at times. So it's not something I'd be overly concerned about. But, you know, I mean, obviously when you haven't scored in your last 10 opportunities, a team that's done extremely well based on those power plays, it's something that's worth mentioning for sure.
And, Shawnee, if you're Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, I mean, I don't think that there's much that you can do in terms of line combinations to get the power play or Patrick Laine going, right? Because Patrick Laine clearly has found his best chemistry this season with Kyle Connor on the wing, Brian Little as center. I mean, I know there are some people that want to see Patrick Laine maybe on the left side of that top line, but for the time being, the Jets are going to continue to roll out Ehlers, Scheifele, Wheeler on the top line, and they're going to continue to roll out Connor, Little, and Laine on the second line. But Laine clearly is not having as good of a month as last year. Here are the numbers. Laine in November, he was the best player in the entire league. He won Player of the Month. He was also the Cy Young winner with 18 goals and one assist. Laine's month of December, 14 games, he's only got 2 goals and 4 assists. We mentioned in the last 5 games, he's only got 1 assist. And again, I realize that people are probably, you know, listening maybe and thinking that I'm crazy, that we're talking about a guy who has this many goals on the year, and we're talking about him struggling for 5 games. But, I mean, 5 games is not insignificant, I don't think, and you know, the game against Calgary, we mentioned he had 5 shots on net, including the one on the post. I think he had 9 shot attempts. He was also -3 in that game.
Yeah, and it's a bit like, I mean, we're just so used to him scoring at a ridiculous pace that when he goes on these slumps, it's just like, what is happening with this guy, right? But I mean, if honestly, that line, that second line, I thought Brian Little had a really good game, but regardless of that, that line has looked a little sluggish as of late. I mean, you look at Kyle Connor's last 7 games, pointless in those. So there's a guy who also hasn't produced in the last little bit. And, you know, it's tough for a guy like Patrick Laine to just put it all on his shoulders with all this pressure. I mean, we've talked pressure since, you know, the beginning of the Finland trip and how maybe that alleviates some pressure and whatever. But, I mean, we've seen the defensive issues. We've seen the board battles along the wall that, you know, need to improve. The goal scoring will come. It's the other aspects of the game, I think, that really need to improve. But it's I think it's that full line. That full line needs to pick it up a little bit. And Kyle Connor hasn't really produced either. So maybe once he gets going, a little bit more or less pressure off Line A and little feeling goodness in the hands.
Dave, if you're Paul Maurice and the coaching staff, Jamie Compan, Charlie Huddy, are you considering switching up the units a little bit? And what I mean by that is, and that might sound like a ridiculous question, because at one point the Jets' power play at home was nearly 50%. with Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor, and Dustin Byfuglien. I mean, that's your number one unit. But do you maybe want to mix it up a little bit to give other teams some different looks? Whether that's moving a guy to the second power play unit, like maybe you move Line A to the second unit. I don't know. Do you have to keep the units together if they were that successful early on in the year? Or do you say, hey, we've got 10 skilled players that we can put out there on the power play. Maybe you move Connor to the second unit. Maybe you do, I don't know, maybe you move Nikolaj Ehlers up to the first power play unit. Would you consider that if you're Paul Maurice?
Not yet. I think it's a little bit early. I don't think it's, I mean, look, let's be realistic. They're not in a position that they're desperate for wins, and I think that they don't need to start making any sort of radical alterations to the lineup or the power play units at that point. So from my perspective, I mean, the one thing to consider, obviously, is that the Canucks and the Flames don't exactly have, like, top-ranked PK units. So these aren't, like, the Flames are the 14th best, and the Canucks are, I think, 20th or something like that. So, yeah, 20th. So it's not like they were up against a top five PK unit. And
like
the
Wild are.
Right, exactly. And yep. And being shut down, it's a function of they were against marginal units, but they just, again, like I said, I don't think it's anything that needs to be radically altered. I think it's a function of, you know, you just keep going, and eventually, with the weapons that these guys possess, it's eventually going to start going back in.
Boys, let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Scott Billick of NHL.com, Winnipeg Sun, and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good Saturday morning. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm Ezra Ginsberg alongside Dave Manouk and Sean Assor. Drew Mandel is away from the program, as Jay Arnright likes to call it, the program. Drew will be back next week for our first show of 2019. This is the last show of 2018. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're now joined by our good friend Scott Billick of NHL.com, Winnipeg Sun, and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk. Scotty, how you doing, man?
I am good. How are you guys this morning?
I apologize that we didn't play Sandstorm by Darude for you as you came on.
Yeah, that's okay. I don't want to talk about that for 20 minutes.
Scott, right before you came on last segment, we were talking about the Jets' power play, and specifically Patrick Laine, who only has one assist in his last five games, no goals. He's only got two goals in 14 games in the month of December after putting in 18 goals in the month of November. I mean, what are you seeing over the last, you know, week and week and a half from Patrick Laine, and what are you seeing with the Jets' power play? Pardon me, it seems to have gone a little bit cold.
Yeah, I mean, for you know, in terms of Laine, I think, you know, we've seen this over the course of his, you know, two and a half years here now, where he just, you know, he's streaky, right? I mean, there hasn't really been a consistent, you know, stretch of goal scoring. They seem to come in bunches, and, you know, we obviously saw that in November, where, like you said, you know, he put up 18, and this month, you know, whatever it is, one, two, you know, like, there's not enough goals, right, coming from off of his stick. And whether that's, you know, the power play still was rolling up into the last four games. So, you know, to kind of merge this, I mean, that's where he gets a lot of his goals from. So, you know, the power play was going, but it wasn't necessarily going through him as much. And maybe that has to do with a little bit of the fact that, you know, teams are cheating a little bit towards him, maybe giving up that slot shot that Mark Scheifele gets, or giving up the point shot from Byfuglien. I mean, it just depends. I agree. And Dave was talking about before I came on, talking about how, you know, teams are kind of adjusting to the Jets' power play. And it's still 30%, or, you know, close enough, right? You know, 27, whatever it is. You know, it's still a very good mark on the power play, but, I mean, teams are starting to key in on it. There's only so much you can do, but if you watched even David Riddick the other night against the Jets, he kind of had, you know, he kind of knew where the power play was going. So I don't know if it's becoming a little predictable, you know, if that's what we could call it. You know, it's just the fact that, you know, when you watch David Riddick play goal and watch what he kind of said after, and he knew kind of where the power play was going, where the shots were going, he had that ability to try and, you know, he knew a split second before where he needed to be, and he was able to get there. And I thought that was a little telling on maybe how, you know, that it, maybe it has come a little bit predictable, you know, and that's fine. I mean, you see other teams like Washington, that sort of thing, who have, you know, a similar power play where it runs through one guy, Nicholas Backstrom, and they try and dish the puck across to Ovi, right? And Ovi's still able to score. So, you know, there's part of this is, you know, the Jets aren't getting a ton of shots on their power play right now. Part of it is just the shots that they're getting just maybe aren't as accurate as you'd want them to be. And part of it is I think teams are adjusting. I mean, this is what happens. I mean, if teams don't adapt to a power play like this, they're just going to keep getting rolled by it. And you know, I think the teams kind of got sick of the Jets scoring pretty much at will. I mean, before this four games, the Jets only there was only ever one game between goals, so they'd only go one game with not scoring before they'd score again on the power play. And, you know, that's as lethal as it comes when you can take one game off and come back right the next game and do it again. So, I think there's a big part of it is adjustment, and the Jets just maybe aren't getting the looks that they want right now.
You know, Scott, one of the most notable headlines coming out of the game against the Flames was Connor Hellebuck's comments about it being open season on goalies. Obviously, the knee to the head he took from Noah Hanifin. Did you think, A, did you have a problem with what that play specifically and Hanifin going into the goalie the way he did? And did you think he tried to move out of the way? And what do you think is behind Connor Hellebuck's comments? Do you think that's a frustration, or do you think he's maybe lobbying for a future call in another game?
Yeah, I think it's part of that, part of the little, you know, I think it's part of both, really. I mean, I don't think Hanifin went through there. There was, if you watch the replay, I don't think there was a ton of room for Hanifin to get out of the way. I mean, he's crashing the net. There's a defender on between him and Connor, and, you know, that's just kind of, you know, it happened. Connor moves over. The knee hits him. It's a fast play. Anytime you slow a play down, it looks worse because you think that maybe, you know, the guy could get out of the way or whatever, right? But at game speed, when you watch it, it's a tough. I mean, I know Connor yesterday, you said that, you know, well, you didn't make an effort to get out of the way. Well, I mean, when you're going to the goal, trying to score a goal, your first thing isn't on your mind isn't, oh, I, you know, I'm not going to try and hit the goalie. I mean, it's not that you want to hit the goalie. It's just the fact that you're trying to score a goal and not worrying about whatever else is around you, right? So I know Connor talked about, you know, well, maybe they need to worry about everything else around them. Well, you know, this is a selfish game, right? You're trying to crash the net to score a goal or whatever it is. So I don't think he's probably just lobbying for a future call, maybe just getting it out there that maybe he is getting hit a little bit much. I don't see him getting a lot of contact. You know, there's been a few in the past. Obviously, the James Neal stick, everybody remember that one. But I don't think he's been, you know, bowled over a bunch of times, right? And I think there was just some frustration there. He obviously lost the game. I don't think it affected him. If you looked at his game after he got hit, I mean, he looked on point. Everything looked fine, right? I mean, I didn't see an issue with him after that, but you know, goalies and players and that, sometimes they look for excuses. Not saying that he was, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's just, you know, part of the frustration of losing a game in the way the Jets did, the way that they played that game, a little bit sloppy, if we're being honest, and you know, just trying to find something to latch on to as to why it just didn't work out for them.
We're joined by Scotty Billick, Winnipeg Jets correspondent with NHL.com, reporter for the Winnipeg Sun on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline on TSN Radio 1290.
Scotty, got to ask you, have you ever had a boss say your performance was bleep and horse bleep?
No, not that I know of.
I had a painting boss told me I was a terrible painter, but I was around for morale. So that's probably the nice way of saying that, right?
I just want to, without discussing.
Exactly. Just want to get back to the power play for a second. I'm curious to get your thoughts on if there's any temptation from the Jets coaching staff just to switch up a little bit of the personnel. We were talking about this before we had you on. You think there's any temptation there from the Jets to maybe tweak the power play look a little bit, or are these things just cyclical and they'll eventually work themselves out with the talent that they have?
Yeah, I think given how successful that power play has been, I mean, there's a long leash there. I would imagine that if you're going to change something up, I mean, the threat of Scheifele in the slot and the threat of Laine on the on the left side, those are kind of staples, and you're not going to move Blake Wheeler out of there. Maybe it's either Kyle Connor or Dustin Byfuglien. That power play did see success with Josh Morrissey on the point when Byfuglien was out, so perhaps you could make a switch there. And then down low, I don't know. I mean, Kyle Connor, the puck doesn't always get down low, so you don't always get to see kind of, what Kyle Connor can do behind the net. And maybe you could put Matty Perreault there, maybe Brian Little, another guy who can, a couple of guys who can still pass the puck and work behind the net. But I don't think there's much to change at this point. I mean, if it becomes a longer slump or whatever, I mean, tonight they could go out and have five power plays and score three goals, and then nobody's talking about this anymore, right? So I think the leash is a little longer here than it might be for a power play that's, only producing at a 15% rate or something like that. I think until, maybe you see some more glaring issues, or they're just not able to hold the zone on the power play or something like that, you'll have it. I think the Jets just need to start taking advantage of the shots that they're getting, and shots that, before they weren't getting a ton more shots than they are now. They're just converting more. So, for four games, we'll call it a slump. If it happens for another four, then yeah, something's going to have to change. But I think right now you just kind of ride it out and see if the guys on the ice can kind of, sort out whatever, the issues are.
Scotty, earlier in the show, I brought up Jack Roslovic, and, Jack Roslovic doesn't have any points in the last seven games. He's only got one assist in his last 11 games, and I mentioned this when I brought Jack Roslovic up. I mean, his skill set is clearly evident. Dave M. and I were in Florida when he was drafted 25th overall, and most scouts were saying that they could have seen Roslovic going much higher. It was almost considered a steal at 25th overall with Jack Roslovic, and he's only 21 years old. We should mention this is only his second year in the NHL, but Roslovic was a point-per-game player with the Moose in the American Hockey League. And my question for you is, how would you assess his usage? Because he's not playing on the power play, he's not playing on the PK, and he's also not getting a lot of 5-on-5 ice time. So obviously, there is an expectation that Roslovic is going to provide offense, but, he's just not getting the ice time.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's just it comes down to the fact that that fourth line is playing sheltered minutes, right? I mean, you're not playing a ton of them, and you're not playing a ton of them against, high-quality opponents and that sort of thing. So maybe, that's an argument, too, that, you're playing some sheltered minutes, so there should be a little more success. But just the time hasn't been there. It was a little bit, Roslovic got, I think it was 13 minutes, and we were closer to 12 in the two games that Adam Lowry missed. But then he comes back against Calgary and plays 7:31, and it's just, I don't know if it's enough time to get a guy rolling. But at the same time, I mean, if you look at the first period in the Calgary game, there's two penalty kills that you have to do, so he's not playing there, and it just starts to screw around with the time that he's going to play on the ice, and then it's a close game, and then you're behind, and you're trying to, you have your top two lines out there, and you're trying to get them to score. The game just wasn't indicative of, or it wasn't a game where you're going to get a lot of time based on the way that the game's played out, and some other games have been like that. I mean, his time is up. I mean, earlier in the season he was playing maybe 4 minutes a night, and there's some games where it was like 5 and 6. So he's played a few more minutes, I guess. But to me, it's not enough time, and he's not playing with the caliber of player that I think would help him out. I mean, I think you saw better games when he was playing on that third line. I think you saw better games when he was playing with Appleton and perhaps Nick Batan or Matthew Perreault. And so they had Kopp on that line in the last game. So, and then a couple of games before that, there was obviously the injuries, and you're playing with Brendan Lemieux, and it's just not, whatever Brendan Lemieux brings to the lineup is up for debate. But I mean, it's just not the type of line that you're gonna, you're asking to go out there and score, right? It's a type of line that it's a fourth line. You're asking them to go out there and grind out a couple of shifts and give the top lines a rest and not necessarily score. So. Jack's probably not in a position right now to be scoring a lot of points and producing, and But there are times where, you know, he does get the rare opportunity, or he's up in the rush and that sort of thing, and you see his skill. It's just not, you're not, I don't think you're going to see it enough of it, you know, playing on the fourth line, and there's really no room for him anywhere up in the lineup right now, based on how, you know, Paul Maurice likes to roll his lines. I mean, I think you could move him up and put him in different spots. But that's just not the way that it's happening right now. And until something changes or an injury happens or whatever, I don't think you're going to see any real difference from his production until he gets an opportunity, maybe higher up the lineup.
Well, Scott, talking about production and usage, you know, Coach Maurice has been known to ride his goalies. I think he said once he rode Artur Zerbe for 70 games in Carolina.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I don't anticipate obviously similar things happening with Connor Hellebuck here in Winnipeg. But, you know, one thing about goalies and, you know, the need to get rest versus the need to get into games is Lauren Brossois' play this season, giving the Jets coach an opportunity to change perhaps what he had envisioned for his goalie plan this season.
Yeah, I think 100%. I mean, I don't know, you know, if you kind of think back to the last time the Jets had a quality backup goalie and a quality starter, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to probably find a duo that did that, that has been able to do that, right? So, I mean, you can talk about the 2014-15 season where Hutchinson and Pavlik played reasonably well and got them into the playoffs. But right now, I mean, Lauren Brossois's got a .940 save percentage. Like, you know, he's exactly what you wanted from a backup goaltender when you signed him. You know, he's only lost two games. He's played 8 wins, and one of those losses came in a game where, you know, he didn't deserve to get the loss. It's just how the game happened, right? So, you know, I think he's just played so well that, yeah, I mean, like you said, I think Paul Maurice has now had the luxury where he maybe hasn't had that in years past, where he can, you know, if Connor Hellebuck's, you know, struggling or whatever it is, and he sees that in his game, he can be confident to go to turn to Laurent Brossois and put him in the crease and not worry about, oh, you know, geez, we've got to put our backup in tonight. We're not comfortable with it, but Connor's got to get a rest or whatever it is, right? But I think he's played so well that, you know, he gives you that confidence that a coach would want out of his netminders. And so, yeah, you know, if Connor struggles or if he just has a bad night and needs a rest, or, you know, I just don't think they need to ride him as much as they did last year, given, you know, the issues that they had with Steve Mason and just backups weren't as good as they have now. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think Paul's got a good luxury right now. And whenever you have that, you don't know what that's going to be until it happens. So, yeah, I think he's able now to – he always talks about how he has his plan for his goaltenders, but I think that's kind of an ever-changing thing right now for Paul Maurice.
Scotty Billick writes for NHL.com, the Winnipeg Sun, and NBC's Pro Hockey Talk, and he's obviously a good friend of the program. Scotty, thanks so much for coming on the show today, and enjoy the game this afternoon between the Jets and the Wild.
Yeah, anytime, guys. Probably see you in a few hours here.
Sure thing, Scotty. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about those Minnesota Wild. They're struggling right now. You're listening to Santa Lucia, Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets and the Moose, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Erickson X supports. He's hit by Lowry. Erickson X a bit slow. Penalty coming against Lowry, who got the elbow up high. And now, right on the bench. Seeler jumped to his defense, and Lowry shoved him into the Winnipeg bench. Coaches are trying to get a handle on the players over here. They're trying to do their best. Lowry's high elbow on Erickson X was the original penalty. Seeler came to Erickson X's defense, and Lowry shoved him right through the door.
Old-time hockey. That's what that was. That was from back on Friday, November 23rd. The Jets Wild game in St. Paul, Minnesota. Bit of a kerfuffle, or maybe a brouhaha, if you want to use that word. If you're a fan of the Beastie Boys, you'll know what I'm talking about with brouhaha. That was a fun game. A game in which the Jets led, was it 2-0? I know they were leading 1-0, And then I thought it was 2-0 or 2-1 in that game, and then the Wild stormed back in the third period. And, you know, at that time, the Wild were actually, you know, going pretty good there.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much anymore. They've only won 3 of their last 10 games. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild today at 3 o'clock. Mentioned earlier, Huss and Rick coming up right after us at noon with the afternoon ride. And then Kevin Owen, friends, with the Manitoba Building Trades Winnipeg Jets pregame show at 2 o'clock. Boys, the Minnesota Wild currently sit 5th in the Central, 11th in the West. They're 4 points out of a wild card spot. They trail the Dallas Stars by 4 points. We'll talk about those Stars later, Shawnee. Tom Gilardi had some interesting comments that we're going to address in the third hour of the show. Minnesota does have 2 games in hand on the Wild, but, you know, mention the Wild are struggling right now. They lost their last game to the Chicago Blackhawks, who are obviously not going to be a playoff team this year. And, you know, you look at this Wild team, and they've got the 10th-ranked power play in the league. They've got the second-best penalty kill in the league. They're relatively healthy, with the exception of Matt Dumba, guys, who has had a great season. He's out for the next 3 months as he recovers from surgery to a torn pectoral muscle. But aside from Dumba, this Minnesota Wild team is healthy. I mean, if you're Paul Fenton and you're looking at the top of the Central with Winnipeg, Nashville, Colorado, you've got Dallas in fourth place with that wild card spot. I mean, are you not looking at making a move here, Dave, before the trade deadline?
Well, I mean, you'd have to think so. I mean, at that point, if you're Dallas and you're kind of still committed to this roster, which is obviously an older roster, then, you know, you had a team that was in contention for early on in the season, and now you've slid to this point. You know, now clearly there's anything can happen in the NHL. You can still make a bit of a run, and we've seen that with teams. So it's not like the Minnesota, as you said, Ezzy, they've got 2 games in hand on Dallas, so it's not like they're completely out of it. Goal scoring is a bit of a problem for Minnesota. I mean, they've only got 105 goals for. Now, their goals against is actually pretty reasonable, and 104 goals against, which is similar, I think, in number to the Jets. Yeah, the Jets have 105, but the Jets have 129 goals for. So, I mean, the goal scoring is a little bit, especially when you remove Dumba now, who, as you said, has been having such a good season for Minnesota. You remove a player like that, it's really tough for Minnesota to kind of gain ground. You're just not doing it, and they're not doing it away from XL Energy. They're 7-10-0, so that means they're not getting, I mean, you're not even getting those kind of those dummy points or the extra points, whatever we're calling them these days. But the fact is you're not getting those, and that's a big problem because, well, I'm not saying they're out of it because they do have those games in hand. We know how hard it is to make up ground in the NHL because of the extra point. So the Minnesota Wild are in trouble. They need to go on a bit of a run, and it's not impossible because there are a lot of struggling teams. You know, we saw just before the Christmas break ended, I think aside from the Jets, every team in the Western Conference had lost like 1, 2, or 3 games. So, or, you know, that were in that top 8 role in the Western Conference had lost a number of games. So Minnesota's clearly not out of it, and they've got, you know, good chemistry, I think, within that group, but they just need to kind of find that next level.
And Dave, I thought this was interesting from Michael Russo of The Athletic. He wrote about this a couple of days ago. The Minnesota Wild have lost 14 games in regulation since October 20th. And the Wild have lost 8 times this season when they've been in a tie game or had the lead at any point in the third period. I mean, 14 losses since October 20th in regulation. I mean, you look at the Wild, the first, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of the season, they were right in the thick of the playoff race. I mean, they weren't leading the division, but they were right up there
with
Dallas and Nashville. And you look at it now, and, you know, they're only 4 points out of it. And there's a lot of hockey to play here, guys. We're only at not even the midway point of the season. I mean, we're a couple of weeks away from the midway point of the season. Most teams have played, you know, 35, 36, 37 games. But, I mean, is this Wild team just an okay average team? Or can Bruce Boudreau get more out of this group?
Well, that's the question. And I mean, everyone in the Minnesota Wild organization probably saw that story out of Dallas yesterday and thinking, yes, yes, crumble in Dallas. But, I mean, listen, they're only 3 points out of it. If Dallas starts to free fall, I mean, the Minnesota Wild can take advantage of this situation. But, I mean, the points have not been there as of late. They're losers of 5 of their last games. I mean, Devan Dubnyk's been pulled 3 times in his last 13 starts. They've scored 1 goal or pardon me, five goals in their last five games. So the offense really needs to pick it up for the Minnesota Wild. I mean, we saw what Eric Staal did last year. I mean, he's having a good season, but perhaps a bit of an aging roster that just, I don't know, can't keep up with the speed of the game anymore. I mean, maybe that's unfair to say, but a huge loss with Matt Dumba, who is not only just an amazing point producer, but just a steady defenseman, a physical guy who is hard to play against, a good puck mover. And it's almost reminiscent of last year when they lost Suter going into the playoffs. It's like, well, can they recover from this such a detrimental loss?
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Shawnee, I think you make a really good point there when you bring up the injury to Matt Dumba and then comparing it to the injury to Ryan Suter last year, because I think it shows you the lack of depth right now that they have in the organization. I mean, yes, the Wild have an abundance of talented players. I mean, I think you could argue that they don't have a game breaker. I mean, Mikael Granlund is an excellent player. Eric Staal is a great player. I think on a good team, though, Eric Staal is a second-line center, maybe even a third-line center. Joel Eriksson-Ek has been sent down to the American Hockey League, the Iowa Wild. Joel Eriksson-Ek, obviously a former first-round pick, but they were expecting Joel Eriksson-Ek to be their third-line center this year. That hasn't worked out. You mentioned the Wild have only scored five goals in the last five games. I mean, guys, with goal scoring up the way it is this year in the NHL, I mean, you're just not going to win many games when you score one goal, no goals, two goals. You mentioned Devan Dubnyk was pulled from last game on Thursday night against the Chicago Blackhawks. Devan Dubnyk is expected to get the start this afternoon against the Jets, and we'll talk about that with Sarah McClellan coming up next segment at 10 o'clock. She writes for the Minneapolis Star Tribune. But when you're talking about Devan Dubnyk, I mean, this is a guy that was absolutely torched last year in the first round against the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I remember when he was acquired by Minnesota and they went on that crazy run, got them into the postseason, and then it just hasn't been able to really find that magic again. Perhaps it's just an aging team in front of him that just, like I was saying, can't put up the run support to give him the necessary help. But, I mean, yeah, pulled in his last, I mean, yeah, winless, sorry, pardon me, winless in his last four starts. So that's got to be, you got to think mentally that's starting to take a toll on him as well.
Right. And Dave, getting back to, you know, what we were talking about before with this Wild roster. And, you know, Miku Koivu is obviously, you know, a player that Jets fans are very familiar with. Zach Parise, Ryan Suter. I mean, Jared Spurgeon is an excellent defenseman. Devan Dubnyk has been, you know, their goaltender now, their starting goaltender for quite some time. But when you look at this Wild roster and, you know, some of the young talent, Jordan Greenway's probably actually been maybe their second best forward after Mikael Granlund. I mean, if you're the Wild, I mean, you obviously still think that you can make the playoffs, but best case scenario, Dave, if the Wild do make the playoffs, are they going anywhere?
No, that's the thing. And I think you said it. Do they have any game breakers? I think this is an advanced, an aging roster that really just doesn't have the horses to get it done. Now, maybe they think that they can make one more run, add a piece here or two. I'm looking at their Iowa Wild roster to see if there's anybody they can call up. But like you said, there's really, I mean, they're a good team down the Iowa Wild. They're second in the Central, but they've got a lot of veteran talent down there. So to me, Minnesota is one of those teams at a crossroads, and it's tough because I think they were going to try and make a go of it, you know, with the Suter Parise combo, and hope that they can, you know, with veterans like Eric Fair and you know, Eric Staal and that sort of thing, that they could make a go of it. But I just don't know that they have the horses in the stable to get it done.
You know, just, you know, we quickly have to head to break here. But when you talk about, you know, some of the top players, we mentioned Mikael Granlund leads the team with 36 points. You know, Zach Parise's got 16 goals. You mentioned Eric Staal earlier has got 13 goals. Miko Koivu, four goals in the 31 games. Obviously, you don't expect Miko Koivu to be a 30-goal scorer, but four goals. Nino Niederreiter, seven goals on the season. Charlie Coyle, five goals on the season. We mentioned Jordan Greenway. He's in his second year in the NHL. He's got six goals. I mean, they expected much more out of guys like Coyle and Niederreiter and more offense from Miko Koivu. I think this team right now is going to be in tough to make the playoffs. And if you do make the playoffs, as you mentioned, Dave, I agree with you. I just don't see them getting past teams like the Jets or the Predators or the Avalanche or whoever. So, you know, the Jets and Wild meet today at 3 o'clock p.m. We're going to talk more about this matchup with Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune coming up after the break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on a Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia Pizza game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Four play point. Unfortunately, sometimes that leads to more relaxation on the rule interpretation in those spots.
Boyle. Out front, Foligno. Slides it back to Dumba. He scores!
Good Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on a Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia Pizza game day. Jets and Wild this afternoon at 3 p.m. Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manuk, and Sean Assor. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality homemade food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline. Sarah, thanks very much for joining us, and welcome to snowy Winnipeg.
Yeah, I, you know, it's been cold in Minneapolis, but not like this. This is a little bit of a rude awakening, but that's okay. We're inside for the game, so it's all good.
Sarah, just feel fortunate that you're not going to be here for New Year's Day, because I think with the wind chill, it's going down to minus 38 Celsius. So whatever it is right now, minus 25, minus 27, I mean, it's only getting worse.
Yeah, okay. I won't complain then. I feel for you guys.
Sarah, I wanted to start off with Devan Dubnyk. We were talking about him last segment. We were talking about the Wild and how they've been struggling. They've lost their last five games. And Dubnyk was pulled from the last game against the Chicago Blackhawks on Thursday night. He's been pulled three times in his last 13 starts. First question is, do you expect Dubnyk to get the start against the Jets this afternoon? And what have you seen from Dubnyk, a guy who's been such a good goalie for the Wild for so long? Is he personally struggling? Has that been overblown, or is it more that the Wild defensively have been struggling as a group?
I do expect him to play today. You know, I think what's happened a lot in these situations is he's gotten pulled, and the team's gone right back to him. You know, they've made it clear that he's their number one goaltender. He's the one that, if this is a team that's going to have success and be a playoff team, he's going to be the one leading the charge. So I expect him to get back in there today. And it's kind of been a mixed bag, I think, with him. I think, you know, early on he saw a lot of pucks. He was facing a lot of shots. I think the defense was kind of settling into new pairings, some new faces. And he was really steady. He was kind of the MVP kind of through the first few weeks of the season, and just being steady, letting everybody kind of find their new roles and their niches. And, you know, when the team was doing well into November, he was part of that. I think he was very steady. I think more so in the last month or so, there's been instances where maybe it's one goal and it just kind of spirals. And he's looked at times that he hasn't had his confidence with his body language. And I think that's kind of triggered this ripple effect where it's looked worse than it is. You know, if you really break it down, maybe not all those goals were stoppable, but it just hasn't oozed the confident, you know, demeanor that he usually has. And so it's probably exacerbated a problem that maybe wasn't as massive into something where it looks peculiar to have, you know, those go in, or Devan look like he's maybe not as set as he'd like to be. And so I don't think it's necessarily always as bad as maybe it's looked, but yet there have been instances, I think, where it's just gotten away from him. And this is a team in too, right now at least, precarious of a situation that it needs every save. It can't get by with not having a save here or there. And I think that was what happened in Chicago the other night. They needed every save with an offense that is not, you know, contributing regularly right now. The margin of error is just too slim. So he'll get back in there to try to be that, you know, be that rock solid force. But it I guess just lately the margin of error hasn't been there with the offense not contributing. He's had to be almost unbeatable, and it's been tough. But he's certainly still during the stretch given them a chance to win. You know, just consistently every night. It's been like the rest of the team. It just hasn't always been there.
You know, Sarah, with an injured defenseman, a lack of scoring, the Minnesota Wild players may be suffering a little bit of deja vu from last season and what happened to them as they went into the playoffs against the Winnipeg Jets in the first round. But is this team thinking to themselves, at least haven't even hit the midway point of the season, so they can still get it turned around?
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Time is on their side. You're right. It does feel very similar, actually, you know, coming into Winnipeg for this game and how this team was set up in the playoffs last season. They were missing Ryan Suter, and then Zach Parise eventually was hurt, and right now they're without Matt Dumba, and they're struggling to score. And it is very reminiscent of adversity they faced in the past, and, you know, they can't go back and rewrite history, but that doesn't have to be the same outcome right now. There's time to fix this. I think they're 4 points shy of that second wild card spot. They're definitely within striking distance. There's time to figure this out. But having said that, it's so clustered right now in the standings that, you know, you can't let this spiral much longer past 5, 6, 7, 8. It will get too tough to climb out of. So I think there's urgency, but I think there also is that perspective that there is time to fix this, but it has to happen soon or else maybe it won't matter.
Sarah, just getting back to the Matt Dumba injury, I mean, not only a loss of pure talent and the amount of minutes he plays as well, but that puts a lot of pressure on guys like, you know, Ryan Suter, Jaron Spurgeon to alleviate some of those minutes. And both those guys, they've had their injury troubles in the past. So you look at the bottom 4 to 6D, and who do you see out of those, you know, bottom two pairing that will step up and help alleviate some of the minutes that Matt Dumba used to play?
I think Jonas Brodin is one who this probably puts a little bit more of a spotlight on him on that second pairing. He's had a few looks, I think, on the power play too now, which isn't usually part of his repertoire, but just needing another point man for the second unit. He's had a couple looks there. I think he's another one like Dumba, a homegrown product who's kind of developed through this system, who is going to be needed to take more minutes and really embrace that shutdown role. That's kind of a responsibility he was maintaining earlier in the season when he was next to Jared Spurgeon, and they were a really reliable duo that you could kind of throw out there, and they were getting the heavy matchups. They were getting the McKinnons and the McDavids, and it was a role that they thrived at, but obviously, like you said, with Dumba out of the picture, the order's been scrambled. Spurgeon's with Suter, and they're the heavy hitters. They're eating up a lot of minutes, but I still think that opens up an opportunity for Brodin and his new partner in Greg Pattern for right now to try to fill that void and be another reliable go-to shutdown option. Pattern's played that role before. He was a free agent signee, came over from Dallas. He, you know, really was signed to be that third pairing right shot defenseman, but this moves him up the pecking order and, you know, can give him an opportunity to show that I can handle this responsibility. I think it's been a little bit of a mixed result so far, but there's still time to show that, you know, once these guys build chemistry and get familiar, that they can be another reliable pair for the Wild to call on.
We're joined by Sarah McClellan of the Minneapolis Star Tribune, formerly of the Arizona Republic, on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Sarah, we have to ask you about Joel Eriksson Ek. He was sent down to the Iowa Wild of the American Hockey League earlier this week, and I remember back in 2015, Dave Minuk and I were in Florida for the draft. Kyle Connor was taken 17th overall by the Jets, and three picks later, the Minnesota Wild take Eriksson Ek a few spots before Roslovic went, actually 25th overall. But, you know, Eriksson Ek only has a few goals this year. I think he only has three goals on the season. Pardon me, only one goal on the season, I'm being told. Eriksson Ek, one goal in 27 games. Why has he struggled so much, and do you expect him to be recalled anytime soon, or is he going to spend the majority of the rest of the season in the American Hockey League?
I could see him down there until he really finds his confidence and starts to show that he can contribute offensively. I think that's the only part of his game that the team feels is missing. You know, he's reliable at his own end. He's responsible. He works hard. He can be, you know, that type of two-way center. But the other half of his game, the offensive part, just hasn't been there. Like you mentioned, with only one goal. This is a player who was drafted, to be, you know, someone that this team can rely on up the middle and touch all aspects of the game, and it just hasn't happened yet. And so I think him going down there, it's, you know, to face competition, to feel good about his game, get, you know, into habits that are conducive to scoring goals and being more of a presence in the offensive zone. So whether that takes a couple games, a couple weeks, I think the team is ready to be patient with him to find that, because being drafted from where he was and being, you know, basically positioned to be, you know, a future high-profile center for this team. It just hasn't matched up to the offensive production that you'd think. So I think, you know, for now it's up to him to try to find that and be able to deliver it on a night-in-night basis, because that's definitely what this team needs right now.
You know, Sarah, 2018 isn't even over, so it seems a little bit early to be talking about trade deadline and looking ahead to that point of the season. But do you anticipate the Minnesota Wild being a team that would be actively seeking to make some additions to this team, depending of obviously if they're still in the hunt at that point?
I think they're definitely going to be exploring, and I think that's probably been the MO for Paul Fenton ever since he took over at GM. Is he's been trying to evaluate, get familiar with the in-house product, what's in the organization, but also seeing what's out there. You know, I know it with Dumba's absence, this was something that they did want to see, you know, how they reacted internally, how the new pairing settled in, if it takes some time. But I know they're not opposed to seeking outside help. So maybe as they get a little bit more clarity in the standings, I wouldn't be surprised if that is something that they try to tweak and explore. And maybe that's when we finally see this first big move by a new GM and putting his fingerprints on this roster. It certainly could come at the deadline.
Sarah McClellan covers the Minnesota Wild for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and she's in Peg City covering this afternoon's game between the Jets and Wild. Sarah, thanks so much for coming on with us this morning. Enjoy this afternoon's game, and we'll make sure that they turn the heat up at Bell MTS Place.
Sounds good. Thank you, guys. Take care.
Thanks again so much, Sarah. Let's head to break. When we come back, this is our last show of 2018, boys. So when we come back after the break, I'm going to get your top three Winnipeg Jets moments of 2018. We all have our top three moments, so that's what we're going to do next segment. You're listening to a Santa Lucia Winnipeg Jets game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the O'Legal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Senators send it back into the Jets zone, and Ben Sherratt, the lead pass, and this gets deflected in by Tanev. Stastny first on the puck. Stastny to the front of the net. Scores! Another sharp angle! And Paul Stastny, first on the puck, jams it from a sharp angle past Pekka-Rinne. And the Jets have a 2-0 lead.
That was Paulie Walnut's big goal in Game 7 of the Jets-Predators second-round series. The Jets went on to win that game 5-1 and that series. Going on to the Western Conference Final to face the Vegas Golden Knights. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Edgar Ginsburg, Sean Assor, and Dave Manuk. This segment of the show is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center and Dr. Les Rikus. Dr. Rikus and his team provides modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdental.com. Boys, as we mentioned before last break, it's the last show of 2018, so it's time to reflect on the year that was for the Winnipeg Jets. It was a pretty amazing year. The Jets go to the Western Conference Final. They win 50 games for the first time in franchise history. We're going to start with you, Dave, with your first memory, top memory of 2018. Then we're going to go to Shawnee. Then we'll go to me. Top three Winnipeg Jets moments. And by the way, we want to hear from you as well. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Tweet at Illegal Curve. Let us know what your favorite memories of 2018 were. There were a lot of them. I mean, there wasn't just one or two. There were many Jets memories. So, Dave Manuk, we're going to start with you. Which is your first top memory of 2018?
I'm going in chronological order. So I'm keeping the chronological. That's my order based. And it probably starts March 27th in Boston, against Boston, a 5-4 Jets win, Brandon Tanev, the unlikely hat-trick goal, or hat-trick three goals. And honestly, it's just Brandon Tanev. I mean, he's probably the most unlikely guy. Like, I'm looking at the list of guys who have hat-tricks on the Jets, and of course, it's the guys you expect. Wheeler, Scheifele, Little, Laine, Ehlers, and Brandon Tanev is there. It's just so funny seeing Brandon Tanev's name on that list. So to me, the Brandon Tanev three goals, and plus, not only that, and it's funny when, you know, we have photographers at all the Jets games, so we always capture the moments. And honestly, the moment, I think it was Colby Spence, our photographer, who took that game, just the reaction to Tanev's, like, he had, like, the longest reaction ever for his hat-trick, and it was very funny. So to me, that would be one of my memories from the 2018 season Jets.
I like that one, Dave. The spark plug, Brandon Tanev. Sean, top three Winnipeg Jets moments of 2018. Give me your first one.
All right. Well, I was going to agree with Davey for my first one, so I'll just go to my second one. And I will take Dave's other pick, and that's the Patrick Laine five-goal game. And, I mean, we don't get to witness five-goal games very often, if at all, in the National Hockey League. And part of a sensationally sizzling month for Laine, and just the circumstances at which it happened. I mean, listen, the guy couldn't miss the net that game. And just where we all were. I mean, we were talking about this off air. We were at a wedding, and we weren't able to actually watch the game, but you could just hear the whispers and the rumblings everywhere you went. It's like,
shout out to our friend Hartsey.
Yes,
and Jackie.
And Jackie. Why'd I go to Hattrick? Oh, my God, 5 goals, 4 goals. You know, you could just hear the whispers everywhere you went, and people were on their phones checking. So it was so exciting. And then, like, seriously, who scores 5 goals in a game?
The name Christopher Haley.
Exactly.
Will remain infamous forever for winning $1 million thanks to Patty Laine scoring those 5 goals. Guys, my first top Jets moment of 2018, it's back to February 28th, 2018. That's Paul Stastny's first game as a Winnipeg Jets. He gets a goal and an assist in that game. The Jets actually ended up losing that game by a score of 6-5. It was just a crazy game, and Ryan Hartman actually scored the winning goal, if you remember, in that game with a minute left. That was his first game as a member of the Predators because he, of course, came over in that trade with the Chicago Blackhawks. But for me, that was so exciting. I was actually in the stands as opposed to our usual perch in the press box, Dave. I was watching that game with Naomi, and you know, there was so much excitement for the future going into the playoffs with Stastny as the Jets' number two center. He was playing, of course, with Laine and Ehlers. So for me, that's one of my top moments. Even though the Jets lost the game, you know, Stastny had arrived with a goal and an assist, and you know, it was looking like the Jets were going to go on a long playoff run with Stastny as their second-line center. Okay, Dave, what's your second top Jets moment of 2018?
Has to be clinching this first series win in Winnipeg since 1987. The win, Game 5, over the Minnesota Wild at home. 5 goals in that first period, and they beat them 5-0 to clinch the series. And just the energy inside the building, and I mean, that, you know, the whiteout, the whiteout isn't just one specific moment to me, but it was like, the energy within Winnipeg was just unbelievable. So to me, when the Jets, I mean, again, it was not unexpected, but it was still such an amazing moment to be in Winnipeg and watching all the Winnipeggers kind of be able to enjoy the first series win. And obviously, first series win for this franchise, the Atlanta/Winnipeg franchise. But it was a lot of fun to be in the building and watching that.
You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Wild, 3 o'clock this afternoon. A game, of course, that you can hear here live on TSN Radio 1290. Shawnee, another top moment from 2018.
I'm going to go back to what Davey was talking about. I just want to get my 2 cents in on the Brandon Tanev hat trick. First of all, Dave, I love the fact that you talked about the reaction, because when he was asked about that celebration after, which was pure joy and emotion, he goes, "I blacked out. I don't even remember." But you just look at the 3 goals. I mean, the first one, he jams it in on the side of the net. It's in Hudobin's glove, but over the line. That's a Brandon Tanev type goal. The second goal, streaking down the right wing, cuts to the middle of the ice, snaps the wrister 5-hole. Not so much a Brandon Tanev goal. And then the third one, a shorthanded wraparound for a hat trick, and then the pure joy and elation. I mean, this is a guy that took the years, I believe, 15 to 18 off of hockey. I mean, you're not supposed to score NHL hat tricks when you take off those prime development years of your hockey career. But here he is, Brandon Tanev. I mean, when he joined the Jets roster at that first year out of college, did anyone think, man, this guy's going to score a hat trick? Not me. But here he is, and his evolution's been incredible, and what a magical moment for Brandon Tanev.
Boys, my second top Jets moment of 2018, it's towards the end of the regular season, April 3rd. No big deal. I was at that game in Montreal. Kyle Connor scores the overtime winner on a beautiful feed from Jack Roslovic. The Jets won that game 5-4. It was their 50th win of the season. We mentioned that earlier, Shawnee. It was the first time in Jets 1.0 or 2.0 history that they'd won 50 regular season games. If you remember, in that game, the Jets rested some of their players. There was no Scheifele, there was no Wheeler, no Trouba, no Morrissey. Sammy Niku also made his Winnipeg Jets an NHL debut in that game, paired up with Buff. He scored his first NHL goal. Nice shot. Laine scored his 44th goal of the year, 20th power play goal of the year. I think at that point in the season, the Jets were just playing so well, and I remember how impressive that performance was with a lot of regulars out of the lineup. And, you know, a Niku goal stands out to me. you know, a guy that, you know, obviously didn't play much for the Jets last year, hasn't played a lot for the Jets this year, but just a really impressive victory with a bunch of regulars out of the lineup. So that stands out for me as a top moment of 2018. Dave, what's your third top moment of 2018?
Well, I think it'll probably come as no surprise to fans. The mine, which again, going in the chronological order, the last one would be the Game 7. Well, I guess technically they went past Game 7. But the most exciting memory for the Jets fans would probably be that Game 7 victory against Nashville in Nashville. I mean, you lose 4-0 at home in Game 6. You're not feeling good about your game. You know, there's a lot of pressure on you. Everybody's saying this is Nashville's year to go to the Stanley Cup and be the Stanley Cup champion, or at least challenge for it. Everybody's kind of thinking, well, at least you've made it this far, and they've kind of written you off. And then you go into Nashville, you chase Pekka Rene with, I think they scored, what, 4 goals on Rene or 3 goals on Rene in that first period, and they end up winning the game 5-1. So to me, going into Nashville, beating the Nashville Predators 5-1 in Game 7, sending the, you know, being the first NHL, I always have to qualify it, obviously, not WHA, but first NHL Winnipeg-based team to make it that far into the third round was spectacular. And again, you know, the energy within Winnipeg was just remarkable, and the fans were going bananas, rightly so, because they could already see the Stanley Cup, not necessarily, again, not necessarily achieving the Stanley Cup, but at least making the finals. But that, to me, was the top moment by far, was that clinch, the Game 7 clincher.
And, Shawnee, you had the same top moment as Dave Minuk, Brendan Tanev, Natrick, but you had another top memory of 2018?
I think me and you have the same one, which was the Game 3 in Winnipeg against Nashville, the 7-4 Jets win when they were down 3-0 to start that game. I mean, that was just pure insanity. I don't think anyone in Winnipeg even realized what they had just witnessed.
Right, and I thought that, you know, we were all going to touch on that Jets-Predators series. I mean, it was one of the best second-round series in recent memory, guys, so I knew that, you know, that was going to be a top moment for at least a couple of us. And, you know, Game 3 stands out, Shawnee. I think, you know, you mentioned they were down 3-0. I remember Austin Watson scored the third goal for the Predators, but they scored those three goals in less than 3 minutes. Remember, Paul Stastny got the first goal, then Dustin Byfuglien had the second goal, and then remember Jacob Trouba, after he tied the game up, you know, he had the double fist pump.
A tic-tac-toe, beautiful play.
It was a beautiful play, and I think it's because those three goals to tie it up came in such short time, and then the teams exchanged goals, I remember, and then Blake Wheeler scored the late goal, and then the Jets. It actually ended up being a 7-4 final. Mm. I mean, it was a high-scoring game in Game 3, and obviously the Predators won the next two games in Winnipeg, and then Dave mentioned, you know, Game 7, the deciding game, so we could have easily picked, you know, any of the Jets' wins in Round 1. You know, Game 1 was a very impressive win for the Jets in Nashville, but that Game 3, to me, we know what the stats are, Shawnee. I mean, if you win Game 3 when the first two games go to each team, when the series is tied 1-1, whoever wins Game 3 has a great chance of winning the series. So for me, that was such a convincing win for the Jets in a game in which they started so poorly.
Yeah, I was just going to say, especially with regards to the start and how quiet the building was.
Yes.
When they were down 3-0. And then when they tied it up, you literally could feel the seismic rumbling inside of Bell MTS Place. And, I mean, Connor Hellebuck making that breakaway save on Victor Arvidsson up.
Yep.
A goal. I mean, there were so many moments. The Byfuglien dance when he scores. It was a crazy time.
So we have some tweets from fans. Plungerhead says, first outdoor whiteout versus Minnesota, the flyover by CF18s. Yuri says his NHL Jets' most memorable moment of the regular season is Scheifele's last-minute equalizer against Washington being down a man.
Mm, that was exciting.
And Thomas Hartlieb says the Game 3 versus Nashville at home from the 3-0 comeback.
Yeah, that Game 3 certainly stands out, as does that entire series between the Jets and Predators. And we do want to hear from you throughout the show. The first half of the show has been dedicated to the Winnipeg Jets. We're going to switch to the NHL for the second half of the show, but we're going to continue to preview this afternoon's game between the Jets and the Wild. But tweet us at Illegal Curve. Let us know your favorite Jets moments of 2018. Let us know your favorite Moose moments of 2018, or any hockey moments that you want to talk about. Tweet us at Illegal Curve. We're going to head to break now, boys. We're going to pay some bills. When we come back, we're going to be joined by former NHL goaltender Marty Biron. He's a Buffalo Sabres analyst for MSG. He also does analysis, for the TSN network. So we're going to head to break now. It's a Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia Pizza game day on the home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.